I think that the most important thing that we teach in Barkai is how to listen to people, how to be attentive to people's needs, how to notice when they're not in a shiur that they've been coming to, how to listen to people. I think that's everything in many ways.
Welcome, everybody. Shalom. We are very excited to be here today to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the founding of Barkai. My name is JJ Sosterman, and I hope you'll join us as we get an inside view of this incredibly important organization that has become crucial to the well-being of Israeli society. With me today is Rabbi David Fine, the founder of Barkai, together with Rabbi Zev Rosenfield and his wife Shoshi, who are currently enrolled in the Barkai program. Through them, we're going to delve into some of the burning issues tackled by the program. But before we begin, let's start with some introductions. Rabbi Fine.
Hi, JJ. Good morning. I'm 53 years old, born in New Jersey. Before I made Aliyah, I was a pulpit rabbi, first in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then in Kansas City. And I made Aliyah 13 years ago.
Well, it's great to have you here with us today, and I'll get back to you in just a minute. But before that, Rabbi Zev, why don't you share with us a little bit about your background?
Good morning. I'm originally from Toronto, Canada. Grew up there, finished high school, came to Eretz Yon, a Hesder yeshiva here in Israel. Spent some time in YU.
YU is Yeshiva University.
Yeshiva University, and I did my master's degree there in Israeli. Finished my Rabbanut learning for the Rabbanut test in Yerushalayim. I'm a Rebbe in a high school, and now I was chosen recently to be the Rabbi of Talmon.
Wow, so the Rabbi of Talmon, an incredible yeshuv just outside of Modi'in. And thank you for hosting us today in your home. It's great to be here.
Our pleasure.
And Shoshi, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Good morning. Nice to have you here. I grew up in New York, in Queens, New York. And also finished the regular maslul. I went to Stern College. We made Aliyah together with our son.
What year did you guys make Aliyah?
1997.
So you are Olim Chadashim now for 24 years.
I would say half and half. And Zao, I'm a high school English teacher for also 25 years. And Baruch Hashem, raising our family in this beautiful yeshuv in the Binyamin area, off on this new venture of joining Zev in his role as the Rabbi of the Kehila.
Wait, when did Zev officially become the rabbi of this kehila here in Talma?
About 5 years ago, the previous rabbi was chosen to be the chief rabbi of the police force, Rav Rami Brachiau, and he asked me to step in on a voluntary basis to be rabbi of half of the yeshuv about 5 years ago. And then 4 years after that, I was elected to be the rabbi of the whole yeshuv about a year and a half ago.
Wow, so you've been the rabbi of this entire yeshuv of about 500 families?
300
families for already a year?
Over a year, yeah.
Wow. That's great. So we're going to come back to that in a second, too. But I want to get back to you, Rabbi Fine. Can I call you David
for
this?
Yeah, sure. Rabbi David is fine.
Rabbi David.
No, David is okay.
So Rabbi David, why did you start Barkai?
Well, we started Barkai for two real reasons. Number one, in Israel, in the state of Israel, when you become a rabbi, when you get ordained, let's say, by the chief rabbi, you don't need to have any practical experience at all. No practical education. You don't have to know how to work with people. Any kinds of skills, which we'll get to later, which we teach in Barkai, you don't have to have any training in or experience in those matters. So rabbis learn, and they learn a lot of halakha, and they learn a lot of Torah, and a lot of Gemara. They get tested in those areas, but they don't have to learn these skills. Now, obviously, we believe in the continued learning of Torah. Torah learning is the basis of all Rabbanut. Someone who hasn't learned a lot of Torah and who doesn't continue to learn a lot of Torah can't possibly be a rabbi. But these other skills are also very, very crucial. And it's important for them to learn these skills because they go into a community and they need these skills in order to work with people. So we started Barkai in order to teach rabbis these skills. But the second and perhaps more important reason why we started Barkai is to bring the whole sense of community to Israel for a bunch of historical reasons, which are beyond the scope of this podcast.
Tune into future podcasts to learn about all those.
Okay, I hope so. At the beginning of the state of Israel, mostly because of David Ben-Gurion, the whole notion of community was seen as a galut, an exile sort of feature, and something that he wanted to get rid of in the new state of Israel. In Israel, he wanted the state to provide everything. So the state provides religion, just like it provides security on the roads and the healthcare system, et cetera, et cetera. There's really no sense, therefore, of community. Just like the state provides that, it provides all religious services. And that's why there's a rabbi of a city or the chief rabbi of the state of Israel. the whole notion of the communal rabbinate didn't really, and in many ways still doesn't exist in the state of Israel. So we wanted to bring a sense of community to Israel. We feel it's very important for so many different reasons.
So Rabbi Zev, I mean, going on what Rabbi David here said, a lot of rabbis in the room. When you got your education and your smicha here in Israel, you didn't get any practical rabbinic education?
Absolutely nothing. I spent 4 years in the Beis Medrash learning Shabbos, Erevin, Kashrus, Nida, Avelos from the Gemaras all the way down to Poskim, and that was the test. There was not even one question or point of learning with anything beyond the halacha.
So I grew up in the United States and also moved here about 25 years ago, and I know I had colleagues and friends who were getting their rabbinic training, which included pastoral training as well, like visiting the sick or taking care of communal issues or specific people's issues in their communities. You got none of that here in your smicha training here in Israel?
Not in the yeshiva, which I loved, and not through the rabbanut. I also had friends who went through training, smicha training in Yeshiva University, and I know that they learned, for instance, public speaking skills, etc. I didn't get any of that here, and it wasn't a prerequisite for me to be appointed to the position.
Wow. David, yes. Maybe you can help us understand, what exactly does the program do?
So the program does a number of things. First of all, it provides a support group to the rabbis. Rabbis are very lonely sometimes in their profession, have no one to really confide in and talk to about the issues that are going on. So it provides a support group for the rabbis to support each other and be there for each other.
How many rabbis are in each cohort?
Right. So we have a cohort that starts every 2 years, and there are around 20 rabbis in each cohort. The cohort meets for 7 hours every week, for basically an entire day every week for 2 years. Like I said, the first goal is to really create a support group. Second of all, it's really to teach the rabbis their role in the communal structure. Since Israeli rabbis, and most of the rabbis are Hebrew-speaking Israeli rabbis that grew up here, they don't really understand their role because they didn't really grow up in that system. One of the things is that we teach them their role in the whole communal structure.
Rabbi Feinl, I'll add, I remember when we started our program, the first maybe 5 weeks, you drilled into us the idea that there's a shul and a community. And it's not so obvious to the Israeli rabbis that there's a community that's also alongside the shul. It's not just the shul, it's the whole beyond the shul, there's a whole community.
Correct. Correct.
Wait, just to clarify that point, is that you're saying even the members of the shul, the rabbi needs to look at them not just as people who are coming to the shul to daven, but also as a community with other needs beyond just
exactly.
coming to shul?
Exactly.
So you're not even talking about more people. It's the same people.
Exactly.
But to look at them holistically.
Instead of just seeing them as people that come to shul, to daven, or to hear a shir, it's to see their needs, individual needs, and to see them as a community, to give them needs as a community.
So the other things that we do, like I said at the beginning, are teach rabbis all kinds of skills. By the way, we also teach practical halakha, because while the rabbis have learned for many years in yeshiva, much of the learning is only theoretical, and they have to know how to apply that halakha in their communities. But the ikar of the program is to teach them the skills that they need to work with people and to lead communities. So we teach a lot of leadership skills. Like Rabbi Zev said, we teach public speaking, we teach chaplaincy, we teach marriage counseling.
Wow, so that's a great point, because right. Now we have Shoshi here sitting with us as well, and I'm starting to understand, I guess, why dealing with the rabbi himself isn't the whole picture. It's really a communal picture where the rabbi's wife probably has an important role to play. So maybe Shoshi, can you talk about part of the training that you get from Bar Kai that helps you as part of the rabbinic couple in the community?
Sure. The training that the women get is a little bit less intense. We meet once a month for a few hours. I think Beikar, it's to have also a support system. The position of the rabbi's wife is also not necessarily a clear one, and in every community, the rabbanit or eshet rav can take it to wherever she wants. But we definitely do a lot of peer learning, a lot of learning from other people's experiences, just hearing that other people are going through, that other women are going through the same challenges or the same situations is definitely very strengthening. And we get a taste of all the topics that that the rabbis are learning. We don't get it as intensely because it's not necessary, but we definitely have learned things about the different needs of the community, the different needs of the people.
Wow, so that sounds ages. Pretty intense. Is this your full-time job?
No.
Well, what do you do in your spare time?
My spare time. I'm an English teacher and
so
all the other things that we do.
And all of this is really on the side in your community.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem. It's a real zchut to be able to, side by side, be involved in projects and different things that are going on in the community, to be an address for people to come and ask questions through me, to the rabbi. I'm also a balanit, so I work in the mikvah, which is another role which I had before, but it's something that definitely was enhanced by the fact that that I'm learning in Barkai and that Zev has this new position. Everything sort of got more meaningful.
Thank you for that. David, back to you for a second.
Right.
You suggested that the concept of a community, even going back to when the state was formed, isn't really prevalent in Israel. But we do have city rabbis, and there are rabbis obviously all over the country.
Right.
So what exactly is lacking?
So the city rabbi or the chief rabbi, their role is not necessarily to get to know or to even counsel people in their individual cities. I'll just take where we live in Modi'in, right? There are 100,000 residents and there are two chief rabbis. So it would be impossible for the chief rabbi to get to know everyone and to be able to deal with everyone's specific issues. The job of the chief rabbi, while they do those things, is mainly administrative, right? The kashrut and the Eruv and registering marriages and taking care of divorces and things of that nature. The communal rabbinate that's developing in Israel right now is really the on the ground with the people every day dealing with the issues that people deal with in their everyday lives.
So let's drill down there a little bit and talk about the actual curriculum that Barkai is providing all these rabbis. By the way, before I go there, we're celebrating Barkai's 10th anniversary. How many rabbis have already been through the program?
So we have 91 rabbis who are either alumni or are currently in the program. But at the end of June, this is our fifth cohort of rabbis. We will have 91 alumni.
And what's the geographic dispersion of those rabbis?
The geographic dispersion is all over the state of Israel. Thankfully, we didn't know what was going to happen, whether we were going to get people that wanted to come when we first started. And we received within a week 150 applications for 20 spots. And each cohort repeats itself. There are many rabbis that feel the need for this kind of education and this kind of training. So because we get so many applicants, we're able to really choose who we think will be the stars. And they come from all over Israel, but not only location, Ashkenazim and Sephardim and Ethiopians and Russians, people from Yishuvim, people from cities, people from the periphery. And that really adds to the learning because there are so many different kinds of people that have so many different kinds of experiences. Like Shoshi said a few minutes ago, the rabbis also do peer learning, or we discuss dilemmas or challenges that the rabbis may have. So everyone's able to take from their community, from their experience, from where they come from, and it all gets added together in a way that makes it...
Enriches
everyone.
Wait,
right?
So let's go back now to the curriculum. Maybe just in 1 minute, and then I'll go specifically to the rabbi and rabbanit. Tell me very briefly, what is the curriculum? Who developed the curriculum and what makes it up?
So I should have mentioned that I have a partner and Barkai was really, in many ways, his idea, Rabbi Shlomo Sobol. And we together developed the curriculum. Before we started with rabbinical students 10 years ago, we spent around 14 months traveling the country and meeting with all kinds of experts, rabbis, doctors, lawyers, all kinds of professions in order...
Everything my mother wanted me to become.
In order to learn what it is that rabbis need to learn and know and be trained in the state of Israel. So we developed the curriculum. And like I said before, I just gave a few examples, but we do start with a course on community. What is a community? Again, because the average Israeli rabbi, because I said before, didn't really grow up in the structure. We have to understand what a community is, what the definition of a community is, what the rabbi's role in that is. Then we move on to more technical things like public speaking, which many people are familiar with in terms of rabbinic education, but we teach all other things that are needed in order to succeed. We teach chaplaincy, visiting people, Bikur Cholim in the hospital is a very important aspect of a rabbi. We teach a course on mental health, especially after COVID. The mental health challenges of congregants of our rabbis is a very, very big issue. We need to take care of the mental health issues. And again, I think we should say that we're not necessarily training psychologists or mitaplim. We always suggest and we stress that it's very important for rabbis to know who the professionals are and to be able to refer people to proper mental health professionals. But still, it's important for the rabbis to have basic knowledge because they're usually the ones that get turned to.
The first line of defense.
Yeah. I'll give an example. Yeah. We had a day on suicide. We had a day on postpartum depression. Real things that happen in real families.
Can you even share with us maybe a specific example or without names of something you gained from Barkai in one of these sessions and have already applied? I mean, you said you're in the middle of your cohort right now, so you haven't even finished the course, but I'm sure you've gleaned some incredible insights and have already put them into practice.
Some with pleasure and some with a hard, difficult heart. We had a case here of a suicide, COVID-related, where a family went through financial difficulties and the father took his life. And I had to also send out my feelers to those people that maybe are considering unfortunate decisions like that, and to say there's people to help you, people to talk to, and also obviously walk the family through what they're dealing with. My wife actually is also part of a team that helps women after birth meet every 2 or 3 weeks, and they have a morning just for the mothers who are young mothers with babies, in order to help them to identify if there's anyone going through postpartum depression. Those are just two examples.
That's incredible examples, because those are both two very sensitive issues. And as we said before, Israelis in general aren't trained to ask rabbis those questions, because there never were rabbis who dealt with those issues, even as a first line of defense. Shoshi, do you experience some of that reluctance on the part of some of the community members to even approach you with some of those issues?
Lahefech. We feel that people are so excited that there's another person to talk to who's not considered a mental health professional. Some people are reluctant to actually turn for help and pay for help. They're much more comfortable coming to Leityaetz and to ask a little and to get some feelers and some support in many of these issues. People actually feel much more comfortable, and the issues that come to our door are very varied and very interesting sometimes, you know, in both directions. And we're very glad. We feel very honored, and it's a big schut to be able to be there and to sort of get involved in people's lives and to have them trust us and understand that whatever they tell us is completely private and protected. On the other hand, that we can actually help and we can give them some support. What's interesting also is that some people tell us when they're concerned about neighbors, when they're concerned about friends who are going through difficult times, and it gives us an opportunity to sort of make the phone calls or make the inquiries to make sure that everybody's doing well, even before things happen.
I just wanted to give JJ two more examples of things that we didn't yet do in this cohort, but we will be teaching over the course of this year. Number one, we have a whole course on how we integrate people with special needs into the community. That's a very important issue in today's society. There are many people dealing with all kinds of issues and who don't feel comfortable. People with both physical challenges as well as mental challenges who feel that they're not welcome in the synagogue. So we want to make everyone feel welcome. And this is not only an art, it's a science. Another issue that we deal with is protecting the community. Unfortunately, there are all kinds of sexual predators out there in today's society. We hear about it. We read about it in the newspaper. We want to make sure that our communities are protected and that people like that are weeded out from our community. So these are just two other examples of not only things that we teach, but issues that our rabbis are getting involved in. And we want to involve them in these issues because we want our rabbis to be relevant. In many ways, in today's society, rabbis are not necessarily all that relevant, right? They're asked questions in halachic.
I would say that over the last 2 years of COVID, they've probably become even less relevant to so many people who aren't walking through the doors of synagogues.
They become less relevant in some ways, but in other ways, they become even more relevant in a major way.
Maybe Rabbi Zev, you can talk about how you've become even more relevant over the last 2 years.
I'll introduce this idea by a message that I got from Rav Osher Weiss. When he was talking to a group of rabbis, what he believes the main role of a rabbi. And he said, you would assume the main role of the rabbi is to learn Torah, teach Torah, which is obviously
an important role.
You would assume. But he said, more than loving Torah, the rabbi has to love people. And that is a line that I've taken with me and has been strengthened by Bar Kai, because you learn to look at the person, not just as a mispala that comes to your shul and fills rows in a shir or in davening, but he's a person and he's a family. For instance, we in the yeshuv over COVID, whenever a person or a family was sick or in isolation, in bidud, my wife actually was in charge of the list of making sure that everybody in the yeshuv was mentioned and was taken care of, that nobody was fell between the cracks. Every person got a phone call. Every person got help. I also, the minute I saw a new name on the list, I wrote them a WhatsApp. I called them. They definitely felt that the rabbi was connected on an individual basis with every person.
So wow, Rav Osher Weiss's line really does a great job in almost characterizing a lot of what you've gotten from Bar Kai, to look at the world not just as loving Torah, but as loving people and seeing people for who they are. People.
Every time I walk into Bar Kai, I walk out with a feeling I now can connect to my constituents. on a much deeper level, on a more meaningful level.
Wow.
We've spoken about many of the topics and many of the subjects that we teach in Bar Chai. I think that the most important thing that we teach in Bar Chai is how to listen to people, how to be attentive to people's needs, how to notice when they're not in a shiur that they've been coming to, how to listen to people. I think that's everything in many ways.
I can share from my own personal experiences. I oftentimes, through my work at Gesher, lead groups to America of Israelis, of high-level Israelis. And we have to teach them, literally spend an entire day telling them they're not going to talk about themselves. They're going to listen. And for Israelis, any Israeli, to sit and listen is a challenge.
In many of our courses, we have what we call listening skills. You would think that it's easy to listen, but while it may be easy to physically listen, it's not as easy to really listen in a way that you're attentive and understanding of the person's needs, the person who's sitting in front of you.
Let me go back to Zev and Shoshi, to Rabbi Zev and Rebbetzin Shoshi. How did you guys hear about Bar Chai? Like, what drove you to send in your application to try to get accepted to the course?
The truth is that they publicize well. Every once in a while, I think they have an ad in the newspaper saying that they're giving an award to the Gabbai of the year and the Rabbi of the year that has been most meaningful, voted by their communities, I think. So I see them. I see them around. I see them in newspapers. I see them on websites. And a few years ago, I approached them when I wasn't officially the rabbi. It was on a voluntary basis. And they said, not yet. And now that I'm official, I'm very thankful that they have taken this in.
But you recognized that you were, I don't want to say you were lacking skills, but you were lacking the skills to be the rabbi of your community, or you could use additional skill sets to be a better rabbi?
I think that every profession has to keep up to date. Doctors, lawyers, etc. If you just look at the curriculum and see the topics that I am learning that I had no knowledge in prior to Bar Chai. Every day that we meet for 7 hours is split into two parts, I would say. One is the halachic side and one is the leadership, I'll call it. We deal with topics there that I who learned Rabbanut exams, never understood to the extent that I learned in Bar Chai. Even, I'll give examples of mitzvot tluot baretz. I didn't learn that in a theoretical way, in depth. I never learned it on a practical way. Bar Chai brings the most professional rabbanim that deal with these issues, kashrut issues, conversion, hilchot mezuzah. They got the rabbi, they wrote the book called Hilchot Mezuzah, meaning we're not learning from amateurs, we're learning from professionals that deal with this every day, Taras Mishpacha, someone from Echon Puah, who gave us, I don't know, maybe a 10, 12 part series. That's just on the halacha side. On the leadership side, we're learning mitigation. We got a course in fundraising, trauma cases, marriage therapy, all these issues that without Bar Chai, I would have no access to learn from professionals.
What existed before Bar Chai? Like, maybe this is a question for Rabbi Fine. Aren't there other organizations out there doing something similar? Why did you start your own organization from scratch 10 years ago?
Yes, there are some organizations that are doing partially what we do. So we started our own organization really for two reasons. Number one, because we didn't feel it was intense and as encompassing as it needed to be. Again, we meet with the rabbis once a week for a full day for 2 years. That's over 600 hours of instruction. I'd like to say that our practical rabbinic education is the most intense in the entire world. And the other reason why we started our own organization is because many of the organizations that do provide some of what we do provide are identified with political parties or have certain political goals. And we just wanted to be a school for rabbis that taught rabbis how to be rabbis and be leaders in their communities. And we didn't want to be distracted by politics or anything else that may be going on around us.
I want to go back to Shoshi. You obviously, as you said before, gained already a tremendous amount from Bar Chai. If you were to look at the world of rabbinic couples all over Israel, what type of rabbinic couple do you think Bar Chai would be relevant for?
I just want to preface by saying that Zev and I grew up in America, and we did grow up with shul rabbis who were very, very different from the typical standard kehillah rabbi or yeshuv rabbi that's here. And when we came into this position, we sort of had a vision that we knew we looked a little funny from the side, and people kept saying, "Atem Amerikaim," and you know, you're bringing your America to here. And I think that through Bar Chai, we've come to find a place that will actually enhance the knowledge that we have and perfect it so that we can do it in a way that will be appreciated by the community and not just like we're doing things that we brought from Chutz La'aretz, but rather things that are appropriate and will enrich the community itself.
what I found amazing when I went to visit Bar Chai, by the way, is that obviously the two of you grew up in America, but you're the minority by far in,
for sure,
in terms of the 91 rabbinic couples who have been through the program. And to see the real born and bred Israeli rabbis, as David said, from so many different backgrounds, gaining all these skills, which have been lacking until today, is tremendous. And I think will have a tremendous effect as the organization grows and spreads its wings throughout all these different communities all across Israel. So while for you guys, it seems like something you envisioned when you assumed the post that you wanted to add to your toolbox, I think for regular Israelis, if you will, quote unquote, it's really a tremendous bracha that they can have these tools as well to add so much to their communities.
In terms of who could benefit from this program, I think that anyone starting off in a new yeshuv, anyone who's taking a position, will find very quickly that really the position of being a Rav Kehila is not limited to Shiurim and Torah. I think that in today's world, everything needs to be more emotional and more connection and more individualized. And I think people will realize that they do not have the skills, and this is a way of getting it in an organized fashion.
I would just say that in answer to your question before, 89 of the 91 rabbis were actually born in the state of Israel, and Hebrew was their first language.
Let's go back to Rabbi Sobel. You mentioned he's your partner. He himself is Israeli born and bred. And it strikes me as very interesting as to how he came about thinking of this idea.
Right. So this is actually a very important story, and one I tell often. He's from a 12th generation Jerusalemite family. I don't think he left the state of Israel until he was in his earlier to mid-30s, when he went to Detroit, Michigan with his wife and two young kids at that point to be the Rosh Yeshiva of the Torah Mitzion Kollel in Detroit. And as he tells the story, he all of a sudden saw something which he never saw in the state of Israel. He saw rabbis that work in the ways that we've been discussing, and he saw that there are communities with committees and that people are involved in the synagogue, and that the synagogue is really not only a place to go to Shiurim and go to Davin, but is the center of the community in every way, shape, and form. And he said to himself, why don't we have this in Israel? So when I came to Israel, my job, my career doesn't really exist on a full-time level here. 91 of our rabbis have an additional full-time job in addition to their pulpit job, because the pulpits don't pay them enough money so that they're able to exist financially. I was looking to sort of re-engineer my career because I didn't know what I was going to do here. And I was networking and meeting with all kinds of people. And one day Rabbi Sobel said, well, I have this idea. I want to start this organization that trains rabbis and builds community in the state of Israel. And will you join me? At first glance, I thought he was crazy. I thought David Fine is going to train rabbis in the state of Israel. But as we thought about it more and we talked about it more, we felt that each of us had something to contribute and that we could make Israel a better place.
Wait, so you just said that the rabbis aren't full-time rabbis. They have another full-time job, and this is almost a side job. I mean, growing up in America, and most of our listeners who are listening to us today are probably in places where the rabbi is in a full-time paid position. Your rabbis aren't like that.
So first of all, I would say that it's a full-time job and part-time pay, because once you become a rabbi, people expect you to be available 24/7. But all joking aside, that is correct. The rabbinate as a the communal rabbinate as a profession does not really exist in Israel. And that's why I said before that I had to re-engineer my own career, because a communal rabbi is not paid. People may pay their lawyer or their doctor or the plumber that comes to their home, but a rabbi, a communal rabbi, is not a paid position in Israel. Yes, they have to have another full-time job in order to create the situation where they can
support themselves.
Supports themselves, exactly.
Some of the rabbis are paid by their community. Some of the rabbis are paid by the state, because we are a religious state, or a state that has a ministry of religion. But it's always part-time.
It's always a part-time job. When we talk about training rabbis, it sounds, or it has a connotation, that we're dealing only with religious Jews in Israel. Are we dealing only with religious Jews in Israel?
Absolutely not. And that is one of our major goals. Just like in the United States, communities attract all different kinds of people, both people that are religious and people that are not religious. We're looking to make the synagogue into a center of the community that is open and accessible to everybody. And a non-religious person in Israel may not come to the synagogue in order to pray, but they may find the rabbi helpful in many areas in their lives. And they may want to be able to utilize the skills that the rabbi has in order to make their lives better. So we're really interested in opening up the doors to everybody and making the synagogue a place that is accessible and open to all kinds of Jews everywhere.
As I think about the organization and how fast it's grown over 10 years and how wide its reach is and the impact that it's already having, one of the key assets to me seems to be the alumni of the organization. And maybe this is a question for Rabbi Zev and Shoshi, but we've, as a country, over the last few years have been through a lot of ups and downs through COVID. We had the hostilities in Gaza and in Lod and in Akko recently. And I know Bar Kai has rabbis in some of those places.
We don't have any rabbis in Gaza yet.
So there's always room to grow. Maybe you can share with us a little bit how that feeling of family between the Bar Kai rabbinic couples helps one another, maybe through a story in Lod when they were going through their issues or any other story that you may have.
The truth is, after that week or two in Lod, so we have two rabbis in my cohort from Lod, and they invited us. I didn't go that day because I wasn't available, but they invited us to come take a tour to see how the Jews live among the Arabs and to see the damage that was done. We have become a community amongst ourselves, and we share dilemmas with each other. There are many WhatsApp groups that we all have on different topics. So we have our main WhatsApp group between us, and then the whole alumni has a WhatsApp group on Taras Mishpacha, a WhatsApp group on Dinei Mamonas, a WhatsApp group on general questions. So all of the alumni ask each other questions all the time.
So it's really like a portfolio of a rabbinic genius between each of the rabbis. And the information doesn't just flow from Bar Kai to the rabbis themselves, but between the rabbis and the rabbinic couples. Maybe Shoshi, you can share how, as a wife of the community rabbi here, how that's affected you, working with some of the other wives of the rabbis?
Also, there's a WhatsApp group where we sometimes share ideas and dilemmas. It's not as active as the rabbis themselves, but I definitely know that if there was a question on how to do mishloach manot for me to the community, I would definitely post up a question and ask other people for their experiences and what worked, what didn't work, how they approached the different chagim and different programs, bat mitzvah programs. I know that there's an address and there are a group of women who can give me from their who could share their wisdom and their experiences with us.
There's a lot of sharing of ideas and a lot of sharing of best practices that I think really, like you said, the word before that you used was enriching. I think it's enriching to both the rabbis as well as the rabbis' wives.
I think beyond enriching, it's incredibly innovative. I mean, we talk of Israel as a startup nation, and I think this is probably one of the most exciting startups when it comes to, I don't want to even say religious life, but communal life in Israel. I don't know of another organization tackling suicide prevention, mental health, integrating those with special needs into the community. And here we see it coming from rabbis who Bar Kai is training, and not just one or two, but we're talking about tens and growing to the hundreds.
Yes.
Really incredible.
Thank you so much. And yes, we hope to grow even further. We start a course every 2 years. We'd like to be able to have a course every year, one that's starting. We have a lot of dreams and plans for the future to increase what we're doing and to do our little part to make Israel a little better.
David, what are some of the challenges facing your organization?
I think that we're in the point where you mentioned innovation, and I think we were seen as a startup, and we really have operated in that way for 10 years. It's time to grow to the next level, grow to the next stage, and that includes many ways of growth, but we need to continue to grow. I think that's the greatest challenge.
You think I'm going to let you end there, but I still have one or two more questions before
okay.
we end. First of all, why is it called Bar Kai?
Okay, we were looking for a name, and Bar Kai is actually the Rashi Tevot, an acronym for Beit Midrash Rabbanei Kilot Eretz Yisrael. But more importantly than that, in the Mishnah, in the third chapter of Yoma, it's described as the first light that's seen in the morning. And we thought that was an apt image for Bar Kai, a light, and that we could enlighten the state of Israel through everything we're trying to do.
I mean, our listeners all around the world, all around the Jewish world listening to this, are getting ready to celebrate. We're in Chodesh Kislev, getting ready to celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah. And maybe you can share with us how they can get involved with Bar Kai, how they can help bring so much light to those who are really so thirsty for it.
Well, I would say there are many ways of doing that. The best way, to be perfectly honest, is to help support our work financially. You could go to our website, www.israelrabbis.org, and you could see there on ways that you can get involved. In terms of moving from the startup phase to the next phase, infusion of financial support is really the thing that's needed the most.
Let me ask you one more question. Maybe it's Evan Shoshi. We have oftentimes, now that Ben-Gurion Airport has opened for tourists, in theory, so many tourists are going to come and visit and are going to want to see Barkai Rabbis in action. If they'd want to come visit your community, for example, is that something we can facilitate for them?
On many levels. We would love to see them as a Barkai Rabbi. I'd love to see them in Yehuda v'Shomron coming to see how Jews are living in the most beautiful part of our land. Please come.
And we'd love to have them join us forever.
I'd just say that one of the projects that we do is twinning. We have twinned our communities in Israel with communities outside of Israel, mostly in the United States. We've been unable to have visitors come here for the last several years because of COVID. But as things open up more, we hope that many of these twinned communities, that the American side of the ocean, will come and visit the Israeli side.
To sum up, I just can't believe that an organization like this hasn't existed prior to Barkai. I mean, the needs and the issues that all of you are dealing with are so crucial to the well-being of Israeli society, so admirable that you guys are spending time delving into these issues. And I think you're really saving lives of Israelis all over the country. And I don't have anything else to say, but kol hakavod to all of you, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much, JJ, and Hashem should just give us continued success and the strength that we all need. In many ways, my job is the easiest. I'm just responsible for making this organization grow. But it's the rabbis and the rabbaniot on the ground that are working with people and that are trying to make their lives better. Again, Hashem should just give them the continued success that they need.
And I would like to thank Rabbi Fein for the opportunity every Monday to walk in for a 7-hour long course, and I've been through many courses. As a teacher, teachers have to go through many, many what we call in Hebrew hishtalmuyot courses. I find most of those courses boring. I walk into Barkai every week, and I walk out very, very enhanced. And I want to thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you for coming.
So this has been great. We hope that all of you tune in to our next podcast with Barkai. We hope to make this a regular series. You listeners out there have been great. Tuning out here, I want to thank Rabbi David Fein, Rabbi Zev Rosenfield, and Rebbetzin Shoshi Rosenfield for your time, for opening up your home, and opening up your ears to listen to what we hope will be an exciting, incredible series going forward.
Thank
Happy
you,
Hanukkah to all.
Thank you, JJ.